And welcome to the second hour of the Penobscot Bay Report and Gulf of Maine Monitor. And joining me is Bill Crow of Fisherman's Voice. We were talking before about the amazing rise and fall of the Goldsboro liquid natural gas proposal. And you were there, Bill, weren't you?
As you know, we've dealt with these guys, the LNG people in Harpswell. We dealt with them in Searsport. So there's been a fair amount of press on the situation. And then when it was presented to the people of Goldsboro, there's a fair amount known on it because we've done several articles on it. And the opposition to it was real strong, especially by the fishing communities and by just the people in town. There was an impromptu meeting on Thursday when we first, Friday, after we heard about it. And there was a meeting with approximately 70 people with some fishermen in it. And then there was a meeting that the representatives from Chambro wanted for the fishermen on night before last. And it turned out to be quite a meeting. It was close to 150 fishermen and another 100 or so residents of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Vigue, the CEO of Chambro, has always mentioned that if there was opposition, that he would not pursue it. And at the fishermen's meeting, there was, like I said, 250 people, a bunch of people with signs. And he brought up the fact that he said if there's opposition to this, he will not pursue it. He said, should we stop it here? And everybody just resoundingly said yes.
So how did people get so organized so quickly? In the case of Searsport, it took a long time. You all certainly rallied quickly up Goldsboro Way.
Yeah, well, like I said, there was a lot of information already out about it from previous instances, and the people just sort of came together. We got petitions going. We had signs going. We had I did some door-to-door canvassing, and I mean, I know a lot of the fishermen here, and I put up posters on their pickup trucks to alert them of the situation and of the meeting, and it all came together. We had probably 2 or 3 days ahead of time before that meeting to get to come together. I think the petitions that we put all over towns and the stores and restaurants and different businesses definitely helped make people aware of it.
It's like an instant outreach.
Yeah. There's quite a few people that got involved, and just through phone calls, we got the list of all the registered voters in town, and we split up that list and made phone calls and made people aware of the situation. There's a lot of information handed out about it. Websites that deal with it were given out so people could find out what exactly LNG was all about. So the people, it got fairly well informed pretty quickly.
Security has always been a big deal with these things, and the population level is lower, that doesn't mean that the government should place less value on you.
No, they shouldn't. I mean, this is what one of the one of the representatives from that gas company in Harpswell mentioned, that there probably wouldn't be need for as much security, but that doesn't fit right. I mean, this is a federal policy on terrorism, and that is the second highest terrorist threat next to a nuclear power plant. So they really can't give you less security. And one thing that we put out here was the fact that they were talking one tanker once a week, but they failed to mention in any of the literature that there was 15 support vehicles. As in Boston, when that ship comes in, they pick them up 2 miles outside of the Boston Harbor with 5 heavily armed Coast Guard boats. Then when they get within 1,000 feet of the Boston Harbor, they pick up 5 Massachusetts State Police boats, two Boston Police boats, and an environmental police boat. They have 11 divers on the bottom, the Massachusetts State Police dive team, and a helicopter in the air. And people heard this, and they said, when you hear this, it doesn't really sound like a very friendly thing, and it isn't. And that's standard procedure, operating procedure in Boston, and that's not with a terrorist alert. If the alert went up, the security would go up.
There'd be more of a clampdown. And so in the case of Goldsboro, it would start causing fishery closures, I assume.
Well, yeah,
and
2 miles is just...
Seiners' vessels couldn't bring their herring in.
No, I mean, it's a Prospect Harbor. It would shut down the approximately, 15 boats that fish out. They would shut them down completely. They would not be able to operate with the parameters at which the LNG operate on. It would shut them down.
There's no way
those guys could fish gear where they wanted to put this. It would affect the fishermen from this whole peninsula, which is the value of the fishing, the lobster fishery on this peninsula is $37 million last year. And their standard offer was usually $8 million, and they were talking about a possibility of a $100 million slush fund for fishermen. So they were talking about $1 million versus a $37 million industry.
you know, I can imagine the red tape and bureaucracy you'd have to go through to get that compensation anyway,
well,
too.
According to some documents that I have here, that there's a quote here, if I can find it, that the state Massachusetts State Police said it's astronomical what it's costing them, and they have not been reimbursed by, just to guess, the people, I believe, the company that's down there.
And yet they don't dare to just reduce security. They're
no.
kind of stuck now that they have the LNG there.
Right. And the mayor of Boston is totally against this. They freak out every time that thing comes in because they close the Tobin Bridge to all traffic when that ship does come in. And there was a statement in that report that I read that if that tanker ever did ignite, it would not only melt the tanker, it would melt the Tobin Bridge. So
Whoa.
This is not your typical gas tanker, oil tanker coming into a harbor. Like I said, this is a major environmental safety threat.
So,
and it's possible to encompass up to 5 to 7 square miles should that thing let go.
Well, so it seems that Goldsboro has fended it off, I would guess, for good, as far as I can't imagine Chinbrough ever saying, well, I've changed my mind.
No, I'll say the representatives from Chinbrough were very good. They stuck to their word. They said right along if there was an opposition, they would not pursue it, and they did that. One good thing, they are a main company, and they did respect the wishes of the people of the state and the town here, whereas the representatives in Harpswell had no concern. They were going to push this thing through with it, no matter who wanted it.
Or the Passamaquoddy Bay stuff there, too, I imagine, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure where that stands at right now. I know this is a major confrontation as far as the people who got to vote on that. And that's being called into question. So.
Right, right. Whether the entire tribe should have been allowed to vote.
Right. As I understand, the difference in vote was somewhere around 30 to 50 votes, and there was over 120 people that weren't even notified about it. So that's in contention.
Going to some other subjects, you're the editor of a newspaper, which means that you're always some distance from a deadline. And can you tell us a little bit about what sort of things you're covering in this upcoming issue?
Well, we'll do a follow-up on this LNG situation here and find out what's going on, an update on the Passamaquoddy situation. And we're also, there's a meeting on the 16th in Fairhaven, which is just outside New Bedford, on the herring bycatch problem with the midwater trawlers. And that should be an issue again. We'll definitely cover that.
Yeah.
And we have a fairly interesting article about tuna farming, which is an up-and-coming thing, which is changing the face of the tuna industry and the herring industry.
Interesting. One of your last issues showed a picture of tuna seining, I think
yes.
it was.
Yep.
That probably was in that same area, at least in Europe.
Well, that was I think that photograph was in Spain, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's turning into big business,
mm-hmm.
and it's not really going to do... The herring fisheries is already enough trouble with the midwater trawlers, pier trawlers. This is not going to... help that situation any.
Nothing's getting any better there, huh?
No. There's this meeting, there's supposed to be a report from enforcement and a report from the herring people themselves as to what's to be done. There's rumor that there was another landing. A boat went to George's in the last
mm-hmm.
several days, and they were into like 30% haddock, and they just dumped the load. Now, that's not fact at this point, but that's what I've heard.
Hmm. So how about groundfish? I know that the state is fumbling around in some way with a groundfish task force. Anything else cropping up in that?
Well, there's another group of getting together here, a Down East group, mostly for trying to come up with a plan for so that the ground fishermen in this area who have stopped fishing, when the fish come back, will be able to. That's just the beginning stages.
Hmm.
Actually, there was a meeting here in town last night. I didn't get to it, but... I believe the Stonington Fisheries Alliance and several other groups, some down east, that are working to come up with some kind of a plan to make sure that when the fish come back, that these guys who have stopped fishing will be able to fish.
Oh, so it won't be like some recent control date and anyone at that point or
I don't think
so. Something.
They're trying to keep this open to anyone who was in the fishery before.
Hmm. So now the challenge is, what you mean is they're trying to get federal permits. Right. We're not talking about state groundfish.
Well,
licenses.
I believe it involves both of them. I'm not totally clear on that because, like I said, they're just forming this group and trying to come up with a plan and an idea. But it's basically is concerned. I mean, the groundfish fleet in this Down East Maine, I think there's only one boat fishing out of it. At one time, there's probably 30.
Wow, that's quite a drop. Every one of your issues has an interesting history piece that your brother does. Has he got one cooked up for this coming issue?
I'm sure he does, but I don't know what it is.
Okay, we know. You guys like to keep that secret until it comes out.
Well, no,
we're all guessing.
He's always so late to get it in, yeah. I never know until the night before.
Any heads up on legislation that might be coming up in the winter?
No, I don't. Not at this point. So stuff, a lot of stuff that was carried over from last year because they dealt mostly with a budget. But as far as the fisheries stuff is concerned, I'm not really sure yet. But the thing that people should be concerned about is that this LNG issue, this is not the place to have it, even though they insist that every port so far is the best site they've had. So far, we've got four best sites. I don't know how they figure that one out. But this is something that doesn't need to be here. This is something that is heavy industrial. This is not doesn't go, fit into the coast of Maine anywhere, not just in Gould's Roll, not in Housewell, not anywhere. Let them take it elsewhere. It's too dangerous, and it's going to cost the state a fortune and the town a fortune, even though they never bring that point up. And Boston is a perfect example.
Okay,
call
well.
The mayor's office and ask him how much it's costing them. Hidden costs to these things that no one has yet publicly stated. They don't tell you how much it's going to cost. All they tell you is how much money they're going to give you.
It sounds about like what the corporate types might do here. We've been talking with Bill Crow at the Fisherman's Voice. Bill, when's your next issue coming out?
The first of October.
First of October, so we can look forward to that down at the various fishing shops, and it'll be at the convenience stores and other places.
Yep, it goes out to close to 400 places up and down the coast.
We'll look ahead for that one.
Okay.
Well, Bill, thanks an awful lot for being on.
You're quite welcome, Ron.
All right, have a good day.
Yep.
That was Bill Crow of the Fisherman's Voice, editor of this paper, and as you can see, a strong proponent of keeping the ecology and the economy and the security of the Maine coast as it is. And keeping it like it is, the essence of enlightened conservatism.